Hello and welcome to the First Take Film Club podcast. I'm your host, Liam Jones, and today, yes, it is spooky season. We are covering the Rocky Horror Picture Show. As ever, I'm joined by my wonderful co-hosts, Connor Norcott and Luke Chanley. Connor, I'll come to you first. How are you, mate?
I'm good, you know. I feel like last week I was on a bit of a downer. I was having a rough week last week, but this week everything's coming up, Connor, I think. Fingers crossed. I don't know. Awesome. We're only on Wednesday. So, yeah, there's plenty of time for that to change. But so far, we're all right. Yeah. How about you guys?
Luke, how are you, mate?
Yeah, all right. Thanks. Yeah, not bad. Hey, got a full-on day of work today, but feeling pretty good. Yesterday, I was absolutely, not to make this particularly political, furious at our entire fucking establishment. Yeah. But, and I was even thinking, you know what? I'm going to go on a rant tomorrow on the podcast. I don't care. And then this morning I woke up and thought, let's just leave it. But so today I feel good today. Yeah. Thanks, mate. How about you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. I've slept really funny on my neck and it hurts. And I've got a 10-hour shift in an hour's time. Well, after this pod, I'm going to go and work a lovely 10-hour shift and a 10-hour shift tomorrow. So I'm feeling, you know, I'm back to working full time and my body just ain't used to it. So, you know, it's one of those though. I'm actually quite, I've been feeling quite lucky to actually have a job at the minute, to be honest. I work in a supermarket and to know that my job won't actually be affected by COVID, well, negatively, is actually, I feel genuinely lucky about that. Yeah. That's what I've been thinking about recently. Anywho. Usually, we like to start with an opening question. This week, we don't have one. So instead, I'm going to ask the boys, what have you been watching recently? Connor, what have you been watching recently?
So I'm on my first week of major assignments. And my first assignment, I'm writing about British nationalism in film. So I've been watching a lot of heavy negative English films because you're all a bunch of dickheads.
Yeah.
I just watched This Is England the other day and I'm still feeling a bit sad from it. And I had to go back and listen to our podcast because I thought we did really well on that. And now I'm thinking can I just submit this? Can this just be my assignment? Because I think we were pretty good on that one.
Oh yeah, I remember that being really interesting podcast.
It was, yeah, it was
we
really
got very
one.
Philosophical. Yeah, it was interesting.
That's been my week anyway.
That sounds depressing.
I'm still having a good one, though.
Awesome. Yeah.
Luke, I know some of what you've been watching recently because we've been talking about it a lot.
It's quite 24/7. So I have largely watched, I think I'm in the middle of season 3 of The US Office for the first time. And honestly, I when you said, we'll just talk about what we've been watching, I thought to myself, The US Office, and then my second thought was, I'm so pissed off with doing a podcast and I'm not watching The US Office right now. And that could be anything. You could be you'd meet the most fucking famous person in the world and I'd be I'd still be pissed off that I'm not watching The US Office. Anything could be happening. So I'm banging to that. Started watching Long Way Up, the Ewan McGregor motorcycle program last night, which is really, really good. And I'm trying to think of any films other than the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I will watch Love Actually. I decided I went full tilt. I've decided, I think I'll have a little monologue now, just give me 1 second. I feel because things are so shit and it's also becoming wintery and everyone's just struggling a little bit with the second wave, I think it's fine to just watch basically whatever you want just to bring yourself joy. So I thought my most joyous film is Love Actually, just because it's so lovely. I'm going to stick that on and I'm probably going to watch it once a week until Christmas. And there we are. So my monologue is, do whatever you want to make yourself happy.
I think I've seen Love Actually over 20 times. But the last time I watched it was Christmas Eve. And it's probably the most enjoyable time I had watching it. I watched it with my mum and dad and we were all quite drunk. And it was just and it's just this feels genuinely happy. And it was one of those moments where it's it's just a lovely film on. It's really happy. It's Christmas Day tomorrow. And it's just one of those. And it's just, Love Actually is a great film. I think I'm going to start watching Christmas films from the 1st of November because, you know, I think we all need it.
A little pick-me-up.
We all need it. Yeah, of course. I mean, if we're all going to be, like, you know, essentially locked down, we may as well start Christmas as early as possible. You know, get Halloween out of the way and we'll just start Christmas on the 1st of November.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Fuck it. Yeah, so I have also been watching The US Office. It's interesting because for the first... I like log all the films I watch on Letterboxd because I'm sad that like that. And for the first 14 days of this month, I'd watched about 26 films, so nearly two films a day on average.
Amazing.
Mainly because my girlfriend had been at mine for 10 days, and we spent a lot of time just watching horror films and stuff because it's spooky season. So we obviously, you know, I think one of the highlights we watched Hubie Halloween, the Adam Sandler film. Which was quite funny.
Yeah.
I tell you what, we actually watched a film which isn't a horror film, but it's a Polish film that's on Sky at the minute called Corpus Christi. It's really good, like genuinely really, really good. And I think there's things in it that you would both actually really enjoy. Like I gave it like 4.5 stars. I loved it that much. It was kind of brilliant. But yeah, speaking of the US Office, so for the first 14 days, I'd watched that many films. And then since then, because I'd started The US Office, I've only watched one film because I've been watching so much of The US Office.
Every time the group chat's blowing up on my phone, it's just you two talking about The Office, and I'm like...
You need to get on it, mate. You honestly need to get on it.
I know. You know, is it on Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
It's not an advert for Amazon Prime, obviously. We'd be lucky. But yeah, okay, you know what, fuck it. I've got a lot of free time this week. I'll put it
on today. It's super sweet, but it's still... You know, not as good as the UK Office loop.
Oh my days.
Did you vote for that as well? I voted for it just to annoy Luke, but I haven't watched the US.
It annoyed me. 35% of the people I know voted UK Office, and it's just not as good because Ricky Gervais is a turd.
Oh, no. To be honest, I think it is nearly incomparable just because the UK Office is completely different,
aren't they?
And it's also UK Office is two series, whereas US is what, nine? So you get so much more time to flesh out the characters and explore different things. So I think it's almost incomparable to compare to a series.
Yeah. I'd definitely say
I 100% prefer David Brent to Michael Scott. 100%. David Brent is like perfect. He is a perfect dickhead. Whereas Michael Scott is actually like almost lovable. And I don't think that's what I want. I don't want to love them. I want to hate them.
there's enough love with Jim and Pam. We don't need to love anyone else.
Exactly. Anyway, let's move on to the main event, the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So we used to start with the budget of the film, and I think it's actually really important for this film in particular to do so. So it was made for $1.5 million. And to date has grossed around $113 million. And that's mainly because it's still being shown in quite a few cinemas around the world. There's one cinema in Germany that I read that shows it still once a week for 45 years. That's crazy.
That's kind of mad, yeah.
It's the longest running film in cinemas, I think, in history, which is really impressive. We'll chat more later about kind of the importance of this film and how it paved the way for, you know, midnight cinema and you know, kind of the important themes it kind of addresses. You know, it's 45 years old, this film, which actually surprised me. I didn't think it was that old. And
yeah,
I know, kind of some of the places it goes, I don't know. I wonder how many you know, American films had actually been this brave and bold in terms of its kind of almost like a complete and utter, like, in your face eroticism from the get go in this film. I wonder how many films had actually done this in America anyway. I don't know about other countries, you know, like 1975 is actually a long time ago. Guys, we weren't even born. Did you
surprise,
know that?
Surprise, yeah.
Surprisingly. So it was mine and Luke's first take this week. And Connor, you've seen it a few times. I think you watched it the first time for uni.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so I'll come to you first, Connor. When you actually first watched it for uni, what was your first take then, way back when?
You know what? I was so excited because we were doing a module on cult cinema, and I was thinking, all right, here we go. It's Blade Runner time. Blade Runner bombed at the box office, and we were like, oh, well, it's got to be that. It amassed a cult following. Turns out that's too big. Real cult cinema is films like the Rocky Horror Picture Show or something like a John Waters film, Pink Flamingo or something. And we ended up sitting down and watching this. And about 10 minutes in, I remember turning to my mate and being like, what is this? Like, what the hell's going on? And I think that's a pretty much, I mean, I don't know about you two, but I think that sums up your first kind of time watching it. If you don't know what to expect, and all we kind of know is through, you know, like you saw it kind of replicated in other TV shows or sometimes in other films. And so we all know like the time warp and songs like that, for better or for worse. But I think I just remember being completely bemused. And then even when it ended, I was a bit like, what? What? Like, I understood the themes it was saying and all the kind of points it makes. I think they make it really validly. I think I was just really shocked at how it did that without kind of making any sense at all in the narrative scheme.
Oh yeah, it doesn't make sense. This film doesn't make sense. There are so many things. The film's written by Richard O'Brien, who I've just learned is the guy from The Crystal Maze, which baffled me. Honestly, it's so the guy that hosts The Crystal Maze is, you know, he's Riff Raff and the writer of Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is, you know, pretty amazing. I've checked on his IMDb as well, and I'm pretty sure he's not really done anything else, you know, creatively other than this. Not that the Crystal Maze isn't creative. Of course it is. He's brilliant in that.
I love The Crystal Maze.
I love The Crystal Maze too. Yeah.
I'm sure it's still shown on Challenge, isn't it? The Challenge.
Yeah,
I think so. Probably.
On Sky. Yeah, so we're all fans of The Crystal Maze, aren't we? The film was also directed by Jim Sharman, who I never have heard of in my life. I don't actually know of any of the other films that he's directed. I'm sure because it's so low budget, I imagine it's all quite, you know, clicky in terms of the production team, because it's so low budget, and obviously it's stage production first. So I imagine most of the guys involved were probably involved in the play. Obviously the actors are Tim Curry was and Riff Raff, obviously, Richard O'Brien, who is Riff Raff, were in the stage play before it was made into a film. So what did we make of the actual performances? So I'll go first, because I've not really said my first take yet, which I've just realised. And I think because I was so kind of baffled by the end of it, and I kind of thought, yeah, there were some things I really liked about it. You know, I kind of appreciate the craziness, and I think obviously that's what they were going for. And, you know, it's noticeably low budget, and, you know, it's very camp, and it's very kind of in your face, kind of a bit, almost cringy in a way. But I think, you know, that's what they were going for. I think like that kind of almost over performance factor of it as well, I kind of like that. And also I was really impressed by the set design, actually. You know, considering it was so low budget, the set design is really, really good.
It's really good.
Like to the point where, because there's one moment I think they go up the elevator into like this pink room where they where they meet Rocky Horror, and they're in that room for ages. Like there's such a long time in this little pink room, and so much happens. But like the set design kind of makes you kind of, I don't know, kind of sucks you in. It's kind of pink brick. You're surrounded by pink brick, and it's almost like a, you know, you got like the fans that are surrounding this little weird like bath of water where this like weird little Frankenstein-esque monster is there ready to be unveiled. So yeah, I just, by the time the film finished, I was kind of just like, what the fuck have I just watched? Interestingly though, like I think because this film is so famous, I was quite, you know, familiar with a lot of the songs. I was familiar with a lot of, you know, with Tim Curry's performance I've seen, you know, in various other films. Maybe I think Perks of Being a Wallflower springs to mind in terms of a film that obviously it's a book, but a film also that has this play inside the film. And I think that's probably where I kind of gained familiarity with Frankenfurter. Who is it that plays, what's his name? I can't think of his name.
So Ezra Miller.
Ezra Miller, yeah. Ezra Miller plays Frankenfurter within the film of Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Oh, does he?
I think, yeah, he does, yeah. I think that was kind of where I noticed kind of how crazy that character is. But also, when I was a kid, my sisters were dancers, and they used to dance to all sorts. And I think they had like a big production of the Rocky Horror Show. So the songs were being played like all day long. But this is from like when I was like 5 years old. So it's kind of like etched into my brain, some of these things. And there is actually one scene in this film that I remember seeing when I was a little kid, and it scared the living shit out of me.
Which one is it? There's quite a few in this, to be honest, that would scare the crap out of me still.
The scene with Rocky Horror in the bath.
Well, when he like comes to life, kind of thing.
No, it's more like when he's releasing all the colors into it. I don't know why that scared the heck. That's literally like freaked me out so much. I didn't like it at all. So yeah, it's weird. It's a real weird one for me. Luke,
go ahead.
Luke, what was your first take?
My first take was that I wasn't a massive fan of the film, but I actually really wanted to be a fan just for what was actually in it, because it's so flamboyant and like really exciting. Like for a film that you never watched before, but you've probably heard so much about and know that it has got this cult following and like loads of people like it. I really wanted to be into it, because like I feel like if you did happen to enjoy it, you could really just jump on for the ride, and it would just take, you know, it would just take you away if you really could lose yourself in it. And I don't know whether I saw it maybe just too late, really, for that. Because like a lot of people I've spoke to, like so many people like this film, and a lot of people I've spoke to have been like, oh yeah, I have memories from when I was a kid of like this film, and in a similar, I mean, not, but in a similar way to like a lot of the films that I really like now still, I like from my childhood. So like Ghostbusters and these type of films where I think they're absolutely brilliant. And, you know, I imagine others are just like, yeah, they're enjoyable. That's maybe a similar thing. But I don't think it helped that I fucking hate the Time Warp and hate musicals. Mm-hmm. And straight away, the first song into the chat, is Time Warp, really. And, you know, so it's one of them, really. But I like kind of like what it represents a lot more than the actual... what it literally is as a film.
I think I'm the same as you, Luke, fully.
I can see why people like it, and I actually think Tim Curry's performance is like absolutely fucking amazing, like absolutely amazing, really. Like I couldn't think of anyone else doing this. And just as we speak, I didn't know what you meant, Liam, by the pouring the colours into the bath, and it's just come on the fucking screen now, and it is so weird. It's so freaky. But yeah, my first take was, I thought it was a bit of a mess, not a massive fan, but almost came out of it quite...
There's like a wry smile still
wanting to like it, almost. But yeah, Tim Curry's fucking brilliant. I'd watch it again just for that, maybe, you know, like if someone was watching it type thing. So,
Yeah, Tim Curry is excellent, isn't he? And obviously he plays like a cross-dressing transvestite from Transylvania. This is something that I didn't quite understand. Is he an alien? Like I know Riff Raff and his sister are, but is he also an alien?
Honestly, mate, I should have said during my first take, I have not a fucking clue.
That's what I mean. I feel like at the end of the film, when I remember seeing the script, like our first screening of it or whatever in uni, I remember being like, hold on, what? Like it went from like, oh, they've turned off at like this kind of, I don't know, this mad haunted house kind of, I don't know, Frankenstein's lair almost. And then it goes from horror films and like, I don't know, typical Hammer horror settings to like, transvestites from Transylvania aliens, and you're like, what the fuck is that? I don't think he is, and if he is, I think, you know, he's obviously betrayed whatever by those two. So
I think obviously, in terms of like the importance of some of the themes in this film, I'm not sure. You know, I couldn't for the life of me tell you if there were other depictions of kind of like cross-dressing and transvestites in film before this. But certainly not to this extent. I wouldn't say there was to this extent before this. Surely not. Not in Hollywood anyway. And I think kind of there was like some important themes in the, obviously towards the end of the film, he's kind of like, I think he's probably the only character, Dr. Frankenfurter, that is more like fleshed out. And you kind of get the impression that he is quite lonely. And obviously by the end, he's trying to turn, so obviously Susan Sarandon's character, Janet, and Barry Bostwick's character, Brad, they're essentially like kidnapped and then almost, well, they need help. So they go into this house and then they're almost like trapped in there. And towards the end of the film, he almost like transforms them and his Rocky Horror little Frankenstein thing into cross-dressers as well. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if, you know, he doesn't want to be the only one. You know, he wants other people like him and he wants it to be like normal. Like he feels like almost lonely, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think like maybe that's kind of an important kind of theme in that, you know, I guess obviously just because he's a transvestite doesn't mean that he's a homosexual, but there is a lot of kind of homosexual references in this in terms of with him, mm-hmm. with his like little creation, there's a lot of erotic kind of like gestures going on between them. And then he also gets into bed with Brad as well. And like, he's yeah. like on top of him and like kissing his neck and his chest and stuff. And I wonder if, there, I don't know if how if there were like kind of
the only thing I can think of
in film before this, but
the only thing I can think of that is as also transgressive, like it kind of breaks down all this, the typical stereotypes, was that John Waters film, Pink Flamingos, and it's another batshit crazy cult following film, and he's kind of that type of director anyway, and it's very like kitchen camp, and then this turns it up. To quote, I don't know, mm-hmm. turns up to 11. Like, it's ridiculous. This film is mad. Were you going to go in there, Luke?
Yeah, well, no, all I was going to say was, I think, I feel like, I'm just trying to think of, so I don't know if there is many other films that do a similar thing, but I'm just thinking during the 70s and with like the lifestyle and with music, especially from that era, that was very, quite flamboyant, and you think of Queen, and you think
like
of
glam rock.
It's very Bowie, isn't it? And you think
it
is of
very Bowie,
and
yeah.
you think of like gender fluidity, and I think it was. I think the show came out a couple of years before the film.
Yeah,
and I do feel like either this fed into that, or kind of the 70s kind of fed into the. Yeah. I think it was a bit of both, but I do think. It's probably pretty original. And I mean, you know, I reckon we could probably find films that did similar things, but mm-hmm. probably not on the scale where you walk down the street and you ask 100 people, what is the Rocky Horror Picture Show? And 92 of them will tell you that it's a film or a stage show. Like, yeah. you know, like it's huge. Like, it's massive. Everyone we know will know what it is. So I imagine that there was just a bit of, I don't know. It just feels very 70s and very. And I actually just looked then to see when I Want to Break Free, the Queen song, obviously had Freddie Mercury dressing as a woman or cross dressing or whatever. And that, I mean, I thought that was the 70s and that was the 80s. So that was even later, really. So yeah, I just think it was like.
It is very much a product of its time. And yeah, fully.
I think that's what I quite like because I don't know if you'd get. I don't know if this film would. I think we like to think we live in a really forward-thinking era, but I'm not sure if this film would get the traction that it did then. Now, and I kind of feel like that's because there's not really a defined theme or feeling of the era that we're currently in. Whereas this feels very 70s, and it's easy to look back 45 years later and say that. But I imagine that this, I don't know, just this fits in with the lifestyle and maybe the culture of the times. And maybe then was, maybe the 70s was a little bit more forward thinking than we like to give
I think so.
Credit for.
Not only that,
I think it was.
Oh, sorry, go on, Connor. I think what's really impressive about it is that obviously, like, it bombed. It was only in cinemas for a week when it came out, and it, like, even I remember Richard O'Brien, we were shown like a clip of him talking about it, and someone asked him, like, well, do you not think, like they used to bring, when it kind of gained a cult following, people used to bring props, like their own props, to the screenings, and these short lines. Like, I think he was asked, like, well, do you not think people are, you know, shouting those lines at the screen a bit, with a bit less fervor, with a bit less, I don't know, like, empathy or aggression or whatever. And he was like, you know what, I'm not too sure because I'm from England, but if you ask, I can't remember the name of the guy, he said, like, ask the this guy who runs, like, the Rocky Horror Supporters Club and still does 45 years later. Ask him, and his answer was, yeah, we'll check back in 20 years. And that was in 1975. And now it's, like, 45 years on, and he's still the president, and it's still popular, and it's still relevant, especially this time of year as well. I think that kind of adds to the legacy of the film and all that it champions.
Surely they didn't expect this to be so successful. They almost, like, was almost like catching lightning in a bottle, isn't it? Because almost everything fell into place. Like, obviously we just touched on, you know, the 70s nature of it, in terms of, you know, it's very kind of David Bowie. It's very much the kind of gender fluidity and the cross dressing of the time. You know, I'm not sure. I don't think Boy George was, I think he was more 80s, but I'm trying to think of different artists that maybe kind of pushed the boundaries in terms of what they wore. But definitely Bowie had started doing things like that around this time. And sorry, I'm watching the film as well. And Meatloaf's there doing his...
I always forget he's in it.
That's the bit thing that I'm up to as well. I've got it on the background as well. It's kind of remind me of what's going on. And he's having a fight. He's rolling around on the floor with someone. So
Yeah,
it's very weird, isn't it? But yeah, I think it was really kind of... I don't know. The more I talk about it, it's one of those things again, isn't it? I think we always have it. The more we talk about it, the more we kind of maybe appreciate it a little bit more than we did after our first take. And definitely that's the case on this film. I just think, you know, when you take into consideration kind of the whole, you know, how the low budget, you know, the fact that they stayed with the cast, well, they stayed with the majority of the cast from the stage play. I think, you know, and you can tell it's almost filmed like it was on, like it's almost filmed like a stage play, like it was filmed on stage almost. Which it probably, I don't know, maybe that's maybe why it wasn't that well accepted, in terms of its, because I think it was released standard cinemas, which was like an afternoon and an evening play showing rather. And I just think, you know, maybe it just wasn't that accessible. Well, I mean, it definitely wasn't accessible because it wasn't popular at all. But they started to show this film at midnight screenings, and that's when it kind of took off.
It became a party, didn't it? That's what it was. Everyone went. That was there. Weekly, they'd go. They'd bring the props. They'd shout their lines out. They'd bring their mates. They come in costumes, and that's kind of awesome. It's almost like the foundations of what secret cinema has become. And I'm not, you know, a big massive fan of that, especially with all the recent stuff that's came out about it. But genuinely, like, it is kind of a precursor for, like, that's where cult cinema started, really. Or it's like the one film that can be shown as, like, an example of what cult cinema is. Not fucking Pulp Fiction. Get out of here with that.
I think that's what I like about it. Like, the content, I could take or leave most of it. Mm-hmm. But I'm really into something that creates something bigger than itself. And this feels like, I imagine if you get, you know, I mean, I maybe wouldn't like the stage show myself because I just fucking hate musicals. But I imagine, like, anyone who's, like, neither here nor there on musicals, if you took them to the stage show, or you took them to a showing of this at midnight with, like, a load of the fans, it'd be like an absolute rave. Like, it'd be fucking brilliant, I imagine. And I think there's just something to be said for that. Like, you know, I know cinemas aren't doing too great at the moment, and there was always talk of them going downhill a little bit, but there's definitely something to tap into there around making, you know, if people think cinemas are too expensive, then what else can they bring to the table? And is it something that's more of an event, more of it's more fever pitch? It's just you know, and I think that's what I like about it.
On a quick tangent, would you guys go to one? Like a not, I don't know what you call it, like almost like a sing-along, shout the words back, like a costume party kind of vibe for Rocky Horror. I'd be well up for it.
Yeah.
I think
us three would have a real laugh.
Yeah, we'd have a laugh,
a couple of shots and then go on in. Even though you hate the songs, Luke, I think it'd be a laugh.
I won't be a laugh because you get, it's that thing, isn't it? By like, if you watch it, it's kind of like similar to comedy. Like if you watch a comedy on your own and something that would make, you know, something makes you smile, but when you're with people, it makes you laugh out loud. And it's kind of like if you're with like, you know, 200 people who are really into this and singing along, or even like just dancing because you don't know the words, you're not just going to fucking stand there, are you? Like a pleb.
True.
You're going to get involved and it's probably going to be an absolute rave. So, but yeah, mad film, like a lot about it.
So this film, obviously, it's a musical. Mm-hmm. So shall we touch on the songs?
I was just about to say that, but I thought I'd let you go as your host. And I'm getting too excited now. I'm ready to go.
I know. So obviously, you know, you have the Time Warp, you've got Sweet Transvestite, you've got, I think it's called, is it called Touch Me?
Yeah, it is.
The Susan Sarandon. I've got it here. It's actually touch. So they're the ones I knew. What do we think then? What do we think of the track list, the songs overall?
I kind of love them, apart from the Time Warp. The Time Warp gives me ABBA vibes. I know this is going to piss a lot of people off, but I don't do ABBA. I just don't. I'm sorry. Everyone that's listening that's disappointed in me, I apologize if you are. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of the only one that doesn't really do it for me. But I think
it's probably because it has become the most. It's probably because it is the most popular song, isn't it? And it gets played a lot.
Like I don't know. Back in the old days when you could go out and dance, and like Matthew Street, Liverpool, and everyone's all wrecked, and I don't know. Your ma's mate from work's out with her fucking heels on.
It reminds me of when I was younger and middle-aged people having the great time of their lives.
Yeah.
And I was being like, I don't like this. It's on at weddings, it's on at parties, it's on at community, you know, it's all these things. And I'm just like, I'm just fucking not in for it at all. So, sorry, that's just me on a little rant.
Same, honestly.
About that song.
What about you, Liam?
I like the music. I really, really like the last 10 minutes.
Same.
Musically, and actually visually, it's actually quite it's probably the, excuse me, just burping up my coffee, visually as well, it's probably the most I wouldn't say experimental, but in terms of, it's probably the best looking section of the film in terms of the camera shots they use. You know, they have the kind of, I don't know what you would call it, the almost downward shot on the pool when they're all kind of doing whatever the hell they were doing.
I love that. Yeah.
Near the end, they're all kind of going a bit crazy. And I think the way that the camera kind of, it sits at the back and you've got the empty seats and then you have the stage. And I think it just looked really cool. And the choreography, I think it is brilliant there. I think there are moments, I think obviously you say, mention the Time Warp. The Time Warp, You hear it obviously, and it's such a popular song. But within this film, it's a bit of a mess, I think.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's what they were going for, but it's a bit of a mess. The editing, they bring in the criminologist guy who's in like a completely different like scene in itself, and it cuts to him, and he's like, jump to the left, jump to the right.
I thought that was good, but just done really badly.
Yes,
yeah, like I think the idea was really good, but it just like felt really, the way it was edited was just like so crude.
Yeah, it was strange, but yeah, I do like most of the songs, and yeah, again, I think the last 10 minutes is just, I think it lost me a little bit after the first quarter, maybe first third of the film, and then the last 10 minutes has brought me back in completely. Like Tim Curry is incredible, like absolutely incredible. Like he actually, like he's incredible all the way through it, but then like the end of the film, he goes for it.
Yeah,
and it's great. It's so good. And obviously, then you, and that's even with the kind of batshit element of the whole alien thing that's brought into it. Then,
I love when the Crystal Maze dude, I've just completely forgot his name.
Richard O'Brien.
Yeah, okay. He comes up and he's got his little like weapon, and it's like a pitchfork, but facing this way. Like, obviously, this is a podcast, you can't realize what I'm saying, but if you've watched the film, you know what I mean. Yeah, it's it all is just a little bit, I don't mean cheap in a negative way, but it is a very like kitsch. They kind of just made do with what they had. And I love that about it. I really do. Yeah. It's almost Evil Dead-y in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely agree with that, where it's like it just, they've almost gone like, this is our budget. We're going to just do the best we can.
We're going to do it.
Make sure it's absolutely, yeah, we're going to do it. It's going to be great fun. I think, I like that. The actual music, so I hate musicals because I don't want to just either watch a film or listen to music. and the musical element in the film itself, like watching it, I wasn't a massive fan of. But in terms of the actual music, all of the songs that were like glam rock and roll, which basically involved Meatloaf or similar, with like rock and roll and piano in, I fucking loved. Like I really liked that type of music. And the rest, I didn't care about either way. But yeah, I mean, it's one of them, though, isn't it? I'm not a musical fan, therefore it's not massively for me.
Do you guys have like a favorite song from it then? I know you're both not massive in. Well, actually, you quite like a musical, don't you, Liam? But it sounds like an insult, but you know, I didn't mean it.
No, I do like a musical, yeah. I think probably the best song probably is Sweet Transvestite, just because I think like after Time Warp, it's also the most famous song from the film.
Yeah.
And it's also like Tim Curry just being boss and just being like,
when you first OCT see him and he's on that throne thing with his legs.
Yeah.
Great legs, by the way. Big up Tim.
Yeah.
Good on him.
He's in good shape.
He is in good shape. He's great set of legs on him. When you see it, he looks cool as fuck. I'm like, I want to wear that outfit and sit on that throne.
He does.
Sorry,
cool.
Mum, if you're listening.
It is a cool like outfit, isn't it, with the corset and stuff.
It's
very brave, isn't it? It's very brave to have your, like, literally it's very compact.
Yeah,
there's a lot of bulges, isn't there, in this film? There's a lot of bulges.
I was wondering what you meant by brave for a minute, and then you did a hand gesture and I understood what you meant.
Yeah, you can't, it's not great for podcasts, but there was a hand gesture right in front of the screen. I know what you mean, and it actually does look, I think that's why I like the character so much, because he does look really fucking cool, and like I think that definitely goes hand in hand with the way he acts it. Like, he properly leans into it.
It's him.
He's properly flamboyant in it. Yeah, he's properly bold, and it just works so unbelievably well.
Yeah, and when you contrast that with like how you first see Brad and Janet or whatever, like they're like typical 50s American kind of boring vibes, we call
Janet
them.
Is so not interested in Brad, really, though, is she?
I don't think so. Brad's got a cushy job, that's why.
Yeah.
So
she's like the one that kind of is like getting into it with all the dancing and all the singing.
Yeah, so
she joins in unwarranted a couple of times and gets a funny look here and there. But you can see that she actually she's digging it, because she's had a boring life or whatever. I don't know. Maybe she's enjoying this kind of naughtiness, I guess you'd call it.
Mm-hmm.
I think like Susan Sarandon obviously is incredible. She's been in so many films over the last 50 odd years. She's probably relatively unknown, I guess, in 1975. So it's a hell of a pick to get her in this. And she is pretty good in it, to be fair. I think her singing voice is a bit odd to me. It's very like high pitched, and like, but again, she's probably not a singer, is she? But anyway, yeah, that's my thing about Susan Sarandon in this. Not that I even said much about it. do we have many other points to touch on? I'm just thinking, we've spoke about the performances, we spoke about the songs, we spoke about kind of the importance of the themes and the midnight cinema. I don't know, is there anything else, Connor, you look
you guys always have any favorite scenes? Because for me, the kind of in the pool scene near the last 10 minutes, and that song, Don't Dream It, Be It, that's awesome. That's so awesome, and that, I think that kind of encapsulates all what the film is trying to say and how it says it and how well it actually says it. And like you said, Liam, it's probably the best made, maybe the most well executed part of the film.
Yeah, definitely. I think obviously I've touched on it, but the final, before the house flies off into space, So the last 10 minutes up to that bit. So I don't really like the closing song when the when Janet and what's his name? They're kind of like laying in the rubble after the house has just flew off to space. And the song that they sing right at the end, I think, is it called Superheroes or something?
Superheroes, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like that bit that much. But yeah, like the 10 minutes prior to that, I think are brilliant. And yeah, with this, like, seriously well executed, and obviously the music's great, it looks great, and the performances are brilliant. And it just stands out to me, that moment. Yeah, 100%.
Definitely.
What about you?
The only, I was going to just say, I was going to be a bit of a cop out and just say any scene with Tim Curry in, because, like, I honestly just fucking
steals
love him,
it.
He steals it. But I think, not to be a bit of a shitbag and just say that, I think I like the scene. So, and it's because of a one particular line, he says it twice, when he like visits Janet and Brad respectively in their beds as Janet and Brad, and then he gets exposed as being
awesome.
A Frankenfurter. Yeah. And then when he said, I think they both say like, oh, what have you done with Janet? And he says, nothing. Why do you think I should? And then he said, but he says it the other way around as well. And I just think that's such a really fucking, like, such a good line.
Yeah.
So I'll go with that scene just for that one line.
That's a good shot, actually. Yeah. Look, I like that too.
Yeah. It is good. I did like that, to be fair. And it's just like, you know, the interesting thing about this is, like, there is just not a big deal made about any of the, you know, be it when he's on top of Janet or when he's on top of Brad, like, it's played equally
exactly
the same.
I love
that. I think that's what surprises me. I mean, just a slight tangent is, like, so many people have got childhood memories of this film, and this film is, like, pretty fucking high,
it's
like
sexual,
you say, highly
yeah.
erotic and sexual,
yeah, definitely.
Isn't it? And I think that's pretty cool, really. Like, I know, like, you know, just it is erotic, but it is kind of good, clean fun. It's just good fun as well.
Yeah.
So I imagine it's the type of thing where, like, when I was younger, my parents never wanted me to watch violence or anything like that, or anything too violent, or didn't like anything with fights in.
Yeah.
But I can very much imagine, they're saying, oh, it's just a bit of fun. Like, it's the type of thing where they would be like, oh, it's a bit of fun, it's fine. But it did surprise me how many people were like, oh yeah, I watched this when I was, I don't know, like 10 or whatever, however age it was. And I was like, Jesus Christ, this is pretty, like, fucking, yeah.
Here's a thought. Can you think of any other films that kind of play with both the male gaze and the female gaze kind of almost equally?
I'm about 10 pages into an 85 page reading on this at the minute, and
yeah.
Currently no. I'll give you that, my 10 pages, no, not really.
I think, like, it's for a film from 1975 to be kind of this kind of equal in terms of, you know, some of the girls in this film are sexualized, but I think more guys in this film were probably sexualized.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Well, probably because there are more male characters, I guess, and that's the point of the film. But and is this? There's just not a big deal made about it, and I think, like, that's how it should be, really, isn't there? Like, I don't know if I could imagine there were some like mega Christian weirdos that back in 1975 that. Kind of
definitely
absolutely hated this film.
Yeah. Yeah,
kind
yeah.
of
yeah.
thought it was like the work of the devil or whatever. But, you know, I think watching it now, I think it's pretty tame. But I think probably in watching it in 1975, I think it's probably quite shocking in a way, and it's probably why it didn't work.
It's
so
provocative,
well.
Definitely. It's yeah. transgressive.
I think that's a pretty good question in terms of what seeing it from both the male and female perspective. And yeah, it probably is. There's probably a lot more from the female gaze in this film than the male, maybe. But I was listening to, just to go off on a slight tangent, but I think it is relevant. I think from what I've listened to, when I listened to a podcast it was a Louis Theroux podcast, Grounded, and it was with Gail Porter, and she was obviously big in the 90s, and like as like a bit of a pin-up girl on Big Breakfast and stuff like that, or Live and Kicking, sorry. And they were just discussing how actually, from the 70s and 80s, it was very quite flamboyant and quite sexually charged on quite an equal level. Although, you know, I imagine if you look back at a lot of films now, it's not great for women, but on more of an equal level. And then in the 90s, there was almost like a cultural reset around like the whole lad culture, and where it was kind of actually all right to be a little bit sexist or a little bit racist as like a joke, or, you know, as like as the butt of a joke. Oh yeah, yeah. And I think that's where we get now from, like, people saying like, oh, it's just a laugh, it's just a joke, I don't mean anything by it. But apparently that wasn't really a thing until like the 90s.
Wow, that's really interesting.
It was fine to be these things because, you know, we have like Britpop, we had all these different things where
all the lads mags lad as
culture,
well.
Yeah, lad culture exploded. And it was almost like there was a bit of a cultural reset. So I think when we say there wasn't much that was like this, I imagine being in the 70s and 80s, there probably was a little bit, especially like music videos. But we grew up, I mean, there is, you know, there's a bit of difference between us in age, but we grew up either born in the 90s or grew up through the 90s, and we were in the middle of that cultural reset where it was all right to be a bit sexist, or it was all right to have racism at the butt of a joke, which obviously it isn't. And I just wonder whether, if that hadn't happened, what films would have come out, or what you know, it's just interesting to think, like, whether the progression would be slightly healthier.
Maybe we'll come full circle then, and hopefully, maybe obviously, because, you know, you say with all the lad culture and stuff, and I mentioned like lad mags and stuff, and I think they're almost becoming extinct now, I guess.
They've definitely been eroded.
I think like the whole kind of like the Brit pop and the whole kind of 90s element, I think it's slowly kind of disappearing as we become kind of, I suppose, we push past the kind of complete, I guess it was unacceptable, some of the attitudes that kind of derived from that moment. So maybe we'll come full circle and we'll get the Rocky Horror Show 2.
2.0.
In like the next 10 years or something, which would be great. Who would play?
Oh my God, what a question.
To be honest, I think, like, what's his name? Oh my God, Timothy Chalamet. I think, I don't know why he popped into my head. I bet he could just play a flamboyant camp.
He is quite an effeminate.
Yeah, I just think like that. But it would be good to watch someone like else.
I think Ezra Miller, obviously he portrayed him in Perks of Being a Wallflower, and he killed it. Like, and he definitely would absolutely take it and run if he got the chance to do it, you know, the full thing, you know, on film or even on stage. Like, he would be great, I think. Like,
that, I think that's really the really good show.
I wouldn't love someone, if there was someone that's looking at it already, you know, to get him to play him.
I'd love someone like fucking Zac Efron. Someone who's like meant to be ultra masculine and he's just like completely breaks it down. And also, Zac Efron is fucking cool. Like, he's just a good dude. So,
on that note, I'd like it to be Vin Diesel. I think that would be sick. I could imagine him in a little pair of stockings and a little wig on and a corset. I don't want to imagine that, actually. That's disgusting. No harm to you, Vin, if you're listening, pal.
Which he obviously is.
So. I think, genuinely, if we're talking about realistic choices, like, Harry Styles could probably do it.
Yeah.
You're just picking really handsome young men. I'm not into it. Vin Diesel all the way.
Fair enough. I don't know if we got any other business to... No. All right, then let's go to our popcorns then. Connor, I'll come to you first, as you've seen this before. What are your popcorns for this?
72. Like, it's not a well-made film at all. It kind of doesn't make sense, but I still really love it. I said last week I love this film, and I actually really do. Like, watching it, I watched it on a Monday morning before my 4-hour lecture that I had, and it was a bit, it felt like a pick-me-up. I feel like a shot of adrenaline to wake me up and go into it, you know what I mean? And I think the more I watch it, the more I get into it, the more I want to wear the outfits, the more I want to put those stockings on. I think, maybe 80 next time we cover it, if we ever cover it again.
Luke, what about you?
I think maybe 60. I think, like, I you know, when we, I sometimes give things maybe higher ratings then because of the 100 thing. So I'm just thinking, I probably will give it 6 out of 10. More for like what it is culturally than what I would watch it again. Maybe if I was with someone else, but I wouldn't put it on. I wouldn't.
Not by yourself.
No, I just kind of think like, nah, but so I think 6 out of 10 is fair.
It definitely is a film that needs to be enjoyed watching with other people, I think.
I agree.
I think like, watching it, like, I watched it by myself last night, you know, after Man United beat PSG, just thought I'd get that in there.
You deserve it, mate.
And it's different. Yeah, it was certainly, yeah, different watching it by yourself. I think a film like this, anyway, I would have loved to have watched it with other people. I think I probably would have enjoyed it more. My popcorns are just a little bit higher than Luke's. I was going to go for in between 60 and 65, so I'll go for a 63. There were loads of things I enjoyed about it, but also, you know, I think the plot is a bit all over the place, which I guess is, there is an argument to say that the plot isn't important at all. It's more about the music and the craziness. But I think, yeah, I think 63 is a fair enough first take from a film that is, you know, very low budget and very kind of all over the place, I guess.
Army, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So next week, we are sticking with spooky season. And to be honest, it's a hell of a week we've got coming up. Next week, we are going to take on Nightmare on Elm Street and Evil Dead 2. We are super excited about this. We covered Evil Dead, the first Sam Raimi film, I think last Halloween.
It was, yeah.
I think we did, yeah.
I think it's interesting that a full year later, we're going to do Evil Dead 2. And I think it's probably the more famous film. I've not seen it, but I've heard so many amazing things about it. I know a lot of people love this film. And also, Connor, two first takes for you. Me and Luke have one first take with the Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, rather. So, yeah, I think we're going to have a lot of interesting things to say about these films.
I am really excited, but also really nervous because I'm just a big scaredy cat. I wanted to swear, but I'm trying to not swear. I'm a little bit of a wuss when it comes to scary films.
Yeah. I don't like watching scary films by myself, but I love watching scary films with my girlfriend because that way the ghost can't get me. Yeah.
I've got enough popcorn in my flat to last me for these two films next week though. So I'm proper excited.
Beautiful. Super excited for that next week. It'll be our final kind of, obviously, I guess we've done spooky season today and we'll do spooky season next week as well. Before we go, I would just like to say please follow us at First Take Pod on Instagram and Twitter. We are always saying interesting things, mainly at the minute about the US office, because you know that's what me and Luke are about at the minute. But yeah, please, if you have any films that you'd like us to cover, please let us know and I'm sure that we'll do it. You know, as long as it's a first take for at least one of us. And thank you very much. Be safe. Enjoy lockdown part 2. I know we won't. Bye, guys.